And on today's Windy City Career Cast, Stonewall, the 40th anniversary is upon us. And Alexandra Billings and I look at the meaning of Stonewall and what the past 40 years have meant for our community. Plus, David Carter, he is the author of a fantastic new book on Stonewall that you need to read. And hopefully, we'll be bringing that Stonewall story to epic life. So this is a whole show on the 40th anniversary of Stonewall with Alexandra Billings and me here. Here in Chicago.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We are talking mega gay.
Oh, I like that.
I'm Alexandra Benz.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Windy City Queercast show number 312 in the area code 312. Alex is tweaking me. I'm Amy Matheny.
I'm Alexandra Billings.
You sound like a munchkin.
I'm Alexandra Billings.
Okay, now like China.
Like China?
Yeah.
Oh, my fake hair is coming out.
I like your China. Oh, no.
My hair.
Put your fake hair away. That scares me. Do you
smell
wash it?
It?
Do you wash
smell it?
No. Do you wash your fake hair?
Yeah. You have to wash fake hair.
Okay, good.
Otherwise, it turns into...
I like it when you talk like China. Okay.
I don't know what that meant.
So, it is 40 years strong, that Stonewall, and our big gay rights movement, our big gay revolution came to life, kind of sprung to life, the embers
sort of
which...
the birth of it.
Really is the birth of it. And yeah. On this show, besides having Alex still here in Chicago, and probably for many more shows over the next handful of weeks...
I'm still here!
We have on the show today somebody that I have to say was just one of the more compelling people I've ever gotten to talk with in an interview, David Carter. His book is called Stonewall, The Riots That Sparked the Gay Revolution. And truly it is, I don't know why, this night in New York and this event now worldwide is recognized as like the time in which we have gay pride parades. Mm. I mean, it's this moment. It truly is like the spark, the ember. It is the, to me, Stonewall is Rosa Parks. Mm-hmm. You know, Stonewall is... you know,
it's very significant.
Gloria Steinem in a bunny suit. Yeah, I mean, it is like the moment
in American
our
history.
Movement.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting. I heard, I don't mean to interrupt you, Amy, I heard that there was a comparison made on one of the blogs that I was reading. It was so great because, you know, there's always this big hoopla over, well, I don't like the, you know, from some of the right, the hard right heterosexual group. There's
conservatives.
The conservatives.
Radical.
And they sort of,
right.
Yeah, and they sort of, oh, well, I don't like all those homosexuals that the dancing and the naked and the
leather and the
leather, right.
Boas.
And there was this great comparison between that and Mardi Gras.
Uh-huh.
And it was really interesting. It's like, well, yeah, but you guys get beads for your boobs. Like,
right.
How is that different?
Yeah.
In what way, like, where is the line drawn, folks?
We drink as much beer and alcohol going down the parade strip. We have as many floats. We probably have better music. Well, I don't know. Mardi Gras is pretty
better.
Fun.
Yeah.
Mardi Gras is pretty
fun. You know, like, we all have our
things. We have our celebrations.
But, you know, it's interesting that...
We let our freak fly, and they do that down in New Orleans, too, let
exactly.
me tell you.
It's interesting that we sort of have...
A stigma, though, for us.
Well, not only a stigma, but as you were talking earlier, you know, a myth about Stonewall and about what that is and about how that's been sort of perpetuated. You know, the Judy Garland and the...
Yeah, we were talking about that off air. I was just saying to Alex that, you know, I was so excited to talk about Stonewall on this show because, you know, and I was reading this book and I, you know, I was reading this book actually in a waiting room waiting for my partner. Before I did the interview, I was just so into it. Mm. And I'm like, I've been doing gay journalism for 10 years. I'm not of the age that, like, I remember Stonewall, obviously. And I'm not of the early gay movement at all. But really in my head, I just go, Judy Garland died. And the queens in New York. And in my head, I kind of think drag queens. The queens in New York got pissed off and, like, stuck their stiletto heel through some cops', you know, foreheads. Like, that's what I think it is. And, like, yeah, sister, like, knock it on down, you know? Disco ball, it's like the light's coming on at 3 a.m. Mm. Don't look at us in the daylight, you know? We're going to bash you with our stiletto, you know? And I can hear, like, you make me feel mighty real. Like, coming to a, you know, like a screech on the on the LP. And that's my vision of it.
Which is
not right.
No, it's not true either.
And that's what's so great about this interview is... You know, and I'll definitely let David talk more about it than you and I because it's just
so probably a good idea,
probably compelling. But you know, but he really has spent so much time with this story, and I want there to be a film made about this. I mean, I really do.
That's a terrific idea.
A great movie.
That's a great idea,
and especially with this energy that we're having around, you know, kind of significant gay storylines with Milk having come out, But what I can talk about is that almost the span of my lifetime, not quite, but I have lived in this revolution. You know, I have lived within, almost, not really, but I have lived within it. I'm not on either side of it because I'm not in my 40s, but I have lived within this revolution. Mm-hmm. I have lived within this spark that has entitled me to be a gay journalist.
Because I'm a little older than you, so yeah. I remember when I first started to transition. I once got pulled over.
How old were you?
I was 19 when I first started to transition.
Now, when you say that, you mean just started living as a woman.
Yep, dressing in female attire. And the law on the books in Illinois were still the same about dressing in the opposite gender's clothing. And I remember getting pulled over by a police car when I was walking across the street. This was on Sheffield, I think. And I was going across the street to get a pack of cigarettes, and this cop car stopped, pulled me over, threw me up against the cop car, said, "Do you have any identification on you?" And I had lived across the street, so I didn't bring anything with me. I was going to get cigarettes, and I said, "No, I don't." And then they said, "Do you have two articles of male clothing on?" And I went, "You mean like tube socks?" And he said, "Yeah, get in the car." They put me in the car, in the back seat, handcuffed me, and took me to jail. Because if you were to dress in the opposite gender's clothing, you had to have two articles of your gender's clothing on underneath.
What the hell does that mean about
anything?
I
have no idea, but that is why they threw me in jail. And I was in jail for 48 hours because of that. And they were still on the books. That law was still on the books until the early 1990s.
Wow.
So I lived through that. I lived through the tail end of the gay revolution. The very beginning. After Stonewall, as it resonated throughout our community, it was still, I was still living in the aftershocks.
Well, you know, what's interesting, you know, about this was like how many... what would you call them? Not riots, but how many when the cops just show up. What's that called? Like, how many...
Raid.
Raid. There, mm-hmm. Thank you. It was the other word with an R. How many raids were happening, you know, in all major cities, especially in New York? Mm-hmm. How many raids were happening? And they said, or he says in this book, that they had already had one earlier in the week.
That's right.
At the Stonewall Inn.
They knew they were coming. They knew that.
Yeah.
They were ready. They knew they were on their way and they were ready. All the transgender community that was in that bar knew what was happening.
But it wasn't primarily even the transgender community.
No, that's right.
Which is what's really fascinating. I didn't realize that it was so many young people, and David will talk about that. But
good.
You know, it's just so interesting to think about the privileges, and as we are about to celebrate Gay Pride as well. Here in Chicago, and they're celebrating Gay Pride in many cities in Europe, mm-hmm. which couldn't be farther away from here.
I know.
And they already just celebrated in Russia, and they're celebrating on every continent, right? You know?
Unbelievable.
And it's just, it's so fantastic that we live in a time where this happens. I remember when I moved up here, and maybe you can talk about this as well. I always think it's compelling around Gay Pride to talk about early memories of Pride, but I remember going to my first Gay Pride parade here, and I stood in front of the closet. I was on Broadway. I was living in Boys Town, which I lived in for the first few years that I was here, and that this would have been in the early 90s. And I remember the person I was dating at the time saying to me, "You're not going to believe what you're going to see. Like, you're just not going to imagine." Because I'd come from Memphis, Tennessee. We didn't really, I mean, maybe we had a Gay Pride parade. It would probably been the kind of thing I'd be like, I ain't going to be one of the 14 people on, you know, the nightly news. Yeah. Like, uh-uh. You know, even though I was really out and I went to events and I was living with a woman and all of that. But being out and, like, letting people film me for television wasn't something that I had thought about. Mm-hmm. And I remember my girlfriend saying, you know, "We're going to go out. We're going to go, you know, I had this place where I kind of like to go." And I remember her saying to me, "It's amazing. It's like so fun. And there's so many people and you can't even imagine it." And then PFLAG comes in and I cry every time. And this is girlfriends and girlfriends ago, but she was not a woman that I would call weepy or sentimental or even soft. And she was like, "I'll just cry like a baby. I cry like a baby every time and scream and clap so much for those." Mm-hmm. And so we got there, and I remember just feeling like, you know, because we got off in a cab, like, blocks and blocks away, and then kind of, like, walking, and just kind of that energy felt like it was just like a hum that started pulling you into it, and then kind of getting on the street and seeing people and everybody's just got like a bounce in their step, and it was a beautiful sunshiny day, and then that parade started happening, and I was like, "Oh my God." And I didn't even realize how this crowd had come around me, you know. And then those damn PFLAGs came down the way, and I got exactly what my girlfriend was saying. You know, I just started sobbing, you know, because at that time I was not out to my family, you know. I had huge fear around my parents knowing that I was gay. And yet I was in the most joyous, happy place. You know, it's that thing we were talking about in your last show. Like, I was having the most joyous moment and also so sad that I felt like my parents would never march in a pride parade. And they probably would today. I've never asked them. But they probably would.
I bet they would.
They probably would, you know? And my dad always goes, "I want to come up and go to that gay idol. I got to see that gay idol once. We got it. We just got Virginia. We just need to go up there."
I love your father.
But my father is like, you know, the gay dream story. Like, hated it, you know, told me, "Why do you want to be something people don't respect? Hate the sin, love the sinner." And now he's like, "I want to come to Gay Idol.
Yeah.
You're hanging out with Alex tonight? Well, that just sounds like the best thing in the world to do on a summer night,
that's,
you know?"
That's right.
And it's just, you know, and that gets to be my story, you know, from that early day of like a pride parade. I have to say I've avoided the parade the past few years, but I'm actually in town this year, and it's really more of just to see if the Grand Marshal is going to be there. Who's going to be the Grand Marshal, Alex?
I heard it's going to be Cher.
I heard it's going to be Alexander Billings.
Really?
Yes, but I think it's going to be Cher.
I didn't get that memo.
Alexander Billings is the Grand Marshal.
Bow before me.
Can you just have a big banner that says, "Listen to me on the Queercast"?
I told them that I wanted a hat and a star so that I could actually be a marshal. That's what I want.
no.
Yes, I want
to. You have a big star. I gave you a blouse. It looks like a big star.
I know, but I want like a sheriff star so that I can say, drop them.
Against the wall. Spread against them. The... There you go. Tweak. Ding, ding. Dark. Don't tweak my breast.
I can't help it.
Are you excited to be the Grand Marshal? I really don't believe this is going to fucking happen.
It
you
is
hate crowds.
Happen. It's absolutely going to happen.
You hate drunk people.
Here's the big problem. Here's the thing that like a lot of people, A, don't believe, and B, when I say it, think that I'm lying.
Okay.
I have a terrible, irrational fear of large groups of people.
I understand this. I believe
you. I know you do, but every time I tell people that, and for me, a large group of people is 10 or more.
So 400,000 should be no problem.
I'm going to kill you for saying that. So
literally, when I got this call. I'm just telling you, like 10 soldier fields is what you're talking about.
Yeah, when I got this call from my manager, like my manager was so excited and he was like, you should do this and blah, blah, blah. I know you're probably going to say no, but I think you should do this. And I was like,
Stonewall year, 40th anniversary.
Well, I didn't know that. I was like, I don't know. I'm so terrified of a lot of people and it makes me very nervous. And he said, it's the 40th anniversary of Stonewall. And I was like, oh. And then he said, they've never had a transgender grand marshal ever in the history of the parade. And I went, oh, well, then I'm doing it.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely doing it.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited. I'm riddled with fear.
You're going to be fine.
And I brought two friends of mine that I'm going to put in the car with me.
Put a good mix CD in.
That's what I think.
The front of your convertible that you can kind of dance to.
I'm very excited. Here's what I'm excited about. I'm excited because
I
like you.
Can Kelly and I drive your car?
No. Because I like you.
She's a very safe driver.
I don't care.
And she's very tall and long.
Doesn't matter. I like you.
Great moment.
I don't care. I, like you, have avoided the parade for like a long time. First of all, I have a, you know.
I just usually take a vacation then because it's actually, by the time I get to the parade, so much of my work is done, and I'm just like, oh, I'm going to go take a vacation.
I've been sober for a long time, so being around any alcohol at all, and I'm not saying drunk people, I just, alcohol makes me very nervous, and I know that's my own stuff.
Yeah.
But it makes me very nervous, so being around alcohol makes me nervous.
Yep.
And then you add large groups of people. It's just pretty much everything that I'm afraid of.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, it's combustion there.
Yeah. So, I've avoided it for a really long time. The last time I was in the parade, or at the parade, was when I was on a float for the baton.
Oh, my Lord.
Which was 1980.
Shantae.
Exactly. 1983, 4, something like that. Wow. So that's the last time I've
been
in this parade.
You never walked with, like, vampire lesbians?
No, I never did, because of those two reasons.
Or cannibal cheerleaders?
No, I have a terrible fear of crowds, and I don't like being around alcohol.
Well, luckily, you're going to be in the front. People won't be quite so drunk when you are coming
through. I'm excited only because I think people are going to be, it's right at the start, so everybody's going to be sort of geared up and ready.
Yeah.
And people are going to be like, hooray! And then we'll all be like, hooray, look, isn't this great? And then I'll be done.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited.
This is my favorite, because I rode in the parade with Les by Gay Radio for 5 years in the back of a Burt Wyman Ford car, and I loved it. And actually, I really did enjoy it.
Was it just fun?
The best way to go to the parade is to be in it in the back of a car.
Really?
Because you just sit, and you get to see people, and people run up to you, and you're like, oh my God, hi! And then you turn up the music, and you hear some dance music in your car, and you just kind of see people.
Well, now you know they have blockades. You can't run up to anybody anymore.
Oh.
They have big blockades.
Well,
like,
that's
nobody
a good
can
reason.
Do that. Yeah.
But back then, it was the best way to see people. I would see people that I'd be like, oh, great, I haven't seen you since last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was like you'd see people at the parade.
Yeah.
But it is truly was always the best way to go through the parade was on a float. And I haven't been in the parade in, Windy City Times, we just work so hard that and we're covering the parade with so many photographers. We just decided, a number of years ago that we're supposed to be covering the parade. We don't really need to be in it.
Mm.
And so we have all our photographers out there, and it just really gave me, and then when we started doing Gay Idol and the Gay Idol finals 5-6 years ago started being the week before, week or week two before the parade, and I worked so hard to get to that point that then I could just take a little vacation and go away. But it's an extraordinary, extraordinary time and a big year, and
it's very ironic.
It's true. I'm excited, and now I may have to go, and I may have to sneak into the back of your car.
You can sit in the trunk.
It's the only way to watch the parade.
Sit in the trunk.
We'll be your
caboose.
I'll
put you in the trunk.
We'll just be on.
I'll give you a little air hole.
We'll walk beside you.
Okay.
Like could we be your Secret Service? Kelly and I could be some hot, like.
If you're topless.
Robert Plant, like looking Secret Service with like gray jackets.
You have to be topless.
Glasses and bright red lips.
Topless.
Slick our hair back.
Topless.
And topless.
Yeah. If you draw little eyes on your boobs and a mouth where your belly button is, then yes, you can be my secret.
Okay, well, that will be me to the right. Kelly will be to the left.
Genius.
In case you all didn't know.
Perfect.
Time to do some news. Tell you what's going on in the theater scene. And then David Carter on the show. It's all about Stonewall. 40 years.
Brilliant.
We're kind of a young little movement, aren't we?
Very. Yeah. Extremely.
But it's very exciting. So let's hear about all of it.
Hi, I'm a Miller Lite brewmaster.
Yeah, and I'm a Miller Lite drinkmaster.
It's the Brewmaster Drinkmaster Show.
I just created a revolutionary aluminum pint bottle. Great new way to enjoy the taste of Miller Lite.
Wow. See, I just designed a new game day delicacy to be enjoyed with your great tasting beer, the 8-layer dip.
Well, the aluminum pint has a wider mouth, giving every sip a superior flow that delivers the great taste.
That's terrific. Most people flow from beef to bean to sour cream to cheese to guacamole to salsa to veggies. See, I'm not most people, though. I flow all the way to jambalaya.
Huh. Also, it's got a resealable cap that makes sure every sip tastes as fresh as the first.
Well, my dip is so hearty, it can last from a day game to a night game.
This isn't a competition, you know.
Okay, fine. You advance the science of drinking great-tasting beer, and I advance the art of enjoying it.
Introducing the new aluminum pint bottle from Miller Lite. Just another way for you to enjoy the great taste. Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is The Week in News. In Baltimore, Maryland, 21-year-old Mark Floyd has been arrested in connection with the murder of lesbian couple Lydia Steed and Alicia Royster. The couple, who had been stabbed several times, was discovered days after the killings. Floyd was dating a stripper who had moved in with the couple. However, Steed and Royster had kicked her out a few weeks ago.
The Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network reveals that GLBT students in Illinois face high levels of harassment at school. In 2007, 89% of Illinois GLBT students experienced verbal harassment in the past year that involved sexual harassment. 43% said they had been physically harassed, and 21% said they had been physically assaulted.
In Wisconsin, the Christian Civil Liberties Union has filed a claim in Milwaukee requesting the right to burn a public library's copy of Baby Bebop, a book for young adults that contains gay themes. Baby Bebop, written by Francesca Leah Block, centers around a teen struggling with his sexual orientation and an attack by an anti-gay gang.
Equality Maryland Executive Director Kate Runyon left her position after only 6 months. Runyon, who did not provide a reason for her departure, resigned effective June 12th. A national search has begun for a new executive director.
In Texas, the defense attorney in a murder trial is claiming gay panic, saying his client beat and stabbed the victim in self-defense. Defendant Eric Smith, 36, allegedly stabbed Marin Byerly, 58, in the chest and eye with a screwdriver, used a cinder block to beat him on the head, and tried to get rid of Byerly's nude body back in September of 2007.
In Santa Ana, California, a judge has awarded more than $700,000 to attorneys representing a police sergeant who was denied career advancement because of false rumors about his sexual orientation. The ruling follows a $1.2 million jury verdict that Sergeant Neil Harvey received in March.
And in world news, in Gibraltar, a private member's bill meant to put the age of consent for gay men in line with the age for heterosexuals and lesbians, which is 16. The bill has been defeated in Parliament. Members who voted against the bill commented that there should be a full consultation on the age of consent for everyone, and that it should have been a government bill instead of a private member's bill.
The Copenhagen city councilor warned that GLBT people may face imprisonment or even the death penalty after taking part in the annual World Out Games. 85 of the participants taking part in the World Out Games in Copenhagen, July 25th through August 2nd, come from countries where homosexuality is illegal.
In entertainment news, Lindsay Lohan's rep said that the actress has not been contacted regarding the theft of $400,000 worth of jewelry from a photo shoot in England. She added that almost 20 people attended the shoot. In other news, Lohan posted a topless photo of herself on Twitter June 15th because she was bored. The image was from a January photo shoot she did with Italian clothing designer Fornarina.
Singer Ricky Martin has apparently said that he is open to a same-sex relationship. Martin, age 37, said that his heart could belong to a male or a female. In 2008, Martin fathered twin boys via a surrogate mother.
Actor Neil Patrick Harris has denied rumors that he plans to start a family with his boyfriend, David Vertka. Harris, who stars as womanizer Barney on TV's How I Met Your Mother, has not ruled out having children in the future, however.
And American Idol alumnus Sanjaya Malakar said he's not gay. On the reality show I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, Malakar said, like, yeah, a lot of people want me to be their gay best friend, and I make a really good gay best friend, but I don't like guys, so it confuses people. He added, I do hair, and I'll sit in the corner and knit, so it confuses people.
And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Now through Friday is your last chance to save on Jersey Boys. Up to 40% off now through August. It's the Boys of Summer Sale. That's right. Only a few more days to get tickets for this blockbuster mega hit for only $54 all weeknights and $66 all weekends. That's up to 40% off main floor seats to one of the biggest hits ever to come to Chicago. But you can only save on the show the Tribune calls the most exciting musical in years if you buy before this Friday. Don't miss this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. The Boys of Summer Sale. Get tickets to the Tony Award-winning Jersey Boys for as little as $54 for performances now through August. Oh, what a night. Don't miss your chance to save on Jersey Boys this summer with the Boys of Summer Sale. Visit BroadwayInChicago.com and use the code SUMMER.
Culture Club, Culture Club, Culture Club. Theater,
music,
dance,
art,
performance,
provocative,
hilarious,
exciting,
weird,
innovative,
campy,
edgy,
original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of June 22nd, 2009, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
The queer queens of comedy return to Chicago with three of the funniest out lesbians in comedy, Poppy Champlin, Michelle Ballin, and Roxanna Ward. The Sun-Times calls Poppy Champlin blisteringly funny, and she just opened for Cyndi Lauper at Milwaukee's Pride Fest. Michelle Ballin was a finalist on NBC's 2006 Last Comic Standing, and Roxanna Ward could be the secret love child of Steve Martin and Bette Midler. The Queer Queens of Comedy at the Lakeshore Theater, July 3rd, 7:30 and 10 o'clock shows. Visit lakeshoretheater.com.
Lifeline Theater presents Busman's Honeymoon, the final chapter in the Dorothy L. Sayers mystery series, featuring Lord Peter Wimsley and Harriet Vane. This Jeff-recommended production has been extended 5 extra weeks through July 26th. For tickets to Busman's Honeymoon, visit lifelinetheater.com.
Writers Theater presents A Minister's Wife, starring Kate Fry and Alan Schmuckler. Michael Halberstam directs this world premiere musical adapted from Shaw's Candida by Austin Pendleton, with lyrics by Jan Tranen and music by Josh Schmidt, the award-winning composer of The Adding Machine. Sharp, witty, and tender, A Minister's Wife explores the fires burning beneath the surface of an ordinary marriage. This show is extended. For tickets, visit writerstheater.org.
See Earth, TTFN, at the Greenhouse Theater Center, playing now in a limited run. Earth is an experiment that has failed in its world premiere sci-fi, Mel Brooks-inspired comedy. With outrageous intergalactic battles, every show is unique as each audience determines Earth's fate in a final climactic vote. Will it be TTFN, ta-ta for now, or TTFE, ta-ta forever? You decide. Visit EarthTTFN.com for tickets. Free t-shirt with every full price ticket. Just mention t-shirt when ordering. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
You guys can go to a club, meet a guy, have a drink, have a dance, get blown in the bathroom. Fabulous!
Hey, this is Poppy Champlin, and you are listening to the Windy City Queer Cast.
Lesbians are like stamps. Once you lick us, we stick. That's it!
Where were you in the June of 69? Did you sing a song of Suzanne or Sweet Caroline? Did you walk on the moon or both feet on the ground? Were you Woodstock bound? Those were the days when the bars became our homes, 'cause we had no church or state to call our own. And they raided the bars and the cars were on patrol, and they bugged our phones. But there came a time, a summer's night, everyone turned out to join the fight. Out of 20 million strong, Not a queer soul was at home to hear it told. To hear it told, everyone was at Stonewall. It's wide and known, not a soul was home. Every G&L has a New York tale to tell, 'cause Stonewall was everyone.
June 28th will be the 40th anniversary of the Stonewall Riots, which has been noted almost mythologically as the beginning of the gay rights movement. And now it marks the time of year when cities around the world celebrate gay pride with parades just because of the significance of that one event. David Carter is the author of Stonewall, The Riots That Sparked the Gay Revolution. And after years of exhaustive research, he is here to give us a very intimate snapshot of this profound moment of our GLBT history. Hey, David, how are you?
I'm great. How are you tonight?
I am very good. Now, I'm talking to you from Edgewater, Chicago, Andersonville, Edgewater, Chicago, which is kind of like the gayborhood north. I am assuming that you're at home, so you're talking to me about a block and a half from the Stonewall Inn location.
That's right. I live in Greenwich Village, and I live just outside the border of the Stonewall Historic District, which was the first time that the federal government recognized a site as having historic significance based on gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender history.
Wow.
Stonewall is on the National Register of Historic Places, and it was also declared a National Historic Landmark, which puts it in the same category as the Statue of Liberty and Valley Forge and Mount Vernon.
Wow. I did not know that. That is fantastic. It all starts at Stonewall, doesn't it? I mean, it's something that I worry that the younger generation really doesn't even know what Stonewall was. And so it's a moment here in this new media revolution here that we're all in of Twitter and Facebook and podcasting to kind of talk to people and remind people, you know, what happened 40 years ago and where were we as a community 40 years ago. So take us back, if you will, David, on what you discovered as kind of what is the bedrock of the Stonewall Riots? How was homosexuality viewed in the U.S. in 1969? What were the laws? What was kind of the temperature for gay and lesbian, bisexual and trans people in 69?
Well, it was radically different. At that time, homosexuality was illegal in every state except for Illinois. You were the first. You had the honor of being the first state to legalize homosexual sex.
There was a lot happening here. That's why they just had to. There's a lot of drinking, a lot of mafia, and a lot of homos in Chicago.
Well, there's a whole interesting backstory to that, which William Eskridge tells very well in the book Dishonorable Passion. So, if people want to hear some of the learn where I learned for the first time some of the backstory to that, it's in that book by William Eskridge, which is a wonderful book.
Hmm.
But anyhow, Illinois showed us the way, but unfortunately, it would be another about 10 years before I can't remember exactly, maybe 8 years before another state followed in Illinois' pioneering footsteps there.
Hmm.
1969. There were no laws anywhere in the United States that protected gay people against discrimination. Gay bars were de facto illegal as well.
Hmm.
It was a time when the police actively entrapped men here in New York City. In the mid-60s, there were over 100 arrests a week in New York City alone.
Wow.
So, and at that time, you have to remember, there were no openly gay politicians, not an openly gay lawyer, doctor, policeman, Hollywood star. It was just a, in many ways, at least from a political point of view, pretty much a wasteland compared to the way the world is now in terms of gay civil rights.
So talk to me then about Greenwich Village, New York. What types of people were living there? What kind of businesses? What made up that neighborhood in which this incident occurred and these riots occurred?
Well, Greenwich Village has a bohemian history going back to the 19th century. Some people credit Edgar Allan Poe staying here as being the first pioneering Bohemian there.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was that because it was a Bohemian neighborhood, apparently gay people figured out that they would be more tolerated here than most other places. So actually a gay subculture sprung up here by the end of the 19th century. And that continued. And so you had all kinds of people living in Greenwich Village, including gay people. And in the 1960s, America, Greenwich Village was pretty much America's only really, you know, famous gay neighborhood or gay ghetto, whatever you want to call it. So many people came here from around the United States who were gay looking for some freedom. Mm-hmm. But even here, the freedom was very limited. Even in the village, there were, you know, restaurants or bars that would put up signs, you know, if you're gay, stay away. Some of the gay people I know from back then who hung out in the village said that, you know, they had to be very careful when they went in where they went in the village, that they could go on Bleecker Street, which to most of America in the mid and late 1960s would have symbolized alternative, far-out, radical, avant-garde America. Because, you know, people who consider themselves avant-garde, liberal, radical, even back then, often those people had an extremely homophobic take on us.
Hmm.
It wasn't the welcoming place that many people thought it would be when they got here. It was, in many ways, really, I think, psychologically, sociologically, a ghetto.
Mm. So how did the Stonewall Inn manifest? How did this, I guess, private club come to be? And is it true?
Well,
what is it? What is the truth about kind of, you know, the criminal underbelly or mafia underbelly of the Stonewall Inn?
Well, because of the, you know, both the liquor law policies and the other legal policies in effect, really honest men could not run a gay bar at that time. An honest man or an honest woman, I should correct myself. And the mafia came in to make money by, you know, letting the dishonest people do it, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So for them, it was purely a means of exploiting gay people. What is important about the Stonewall Inn is that although the mafia's only interest was exploitation, they did make it a bar that was much more attractive than other bars at the time, other gay bars at the time. They had more security on the door. They had two rooms for dancing. They allowed people to dance. The Stonewall, when it opened, became the largest and most popular gay club in the city. The mafia made money hand over fist there, and they paid off the police probably definitely better than any other gay bar in the city.
Mm-hmm.
But they were a very lucrative golden egg laid by the mafia goose, so to speak, for the police there. So the raids were usually carefully coordinated to minimize disruption to the place. It was the only place at that time that lasted for years. It was the only place where one could go and always count on being able to dance, always being able to slow dance. And it catered to an entire cross-section of the community. Most people who went there were white and were middle class, but it was a place where you had a mixture of all kinds of people, and although the more marginal elements there were in the minority, they essentially set the tone for the place. So there was an air of wildness in the sense of free, untamed atmosphere about it. And that's why many people loved it. It sort of functioned de facto as a sort of community center when there was no community center in New York City.
So it is a myth that it was just all drag queens on that fateful night. I mean, there's this thought, you know, of like the drag queens rebelled on the night Judy Garland died. I mean, for many people, that's kind of like the sentence of Stonewall, right?
That's true. That's true. That's how many people think about it. It's sort of like, you know, the old idea, you know, there are all these myths about George Washington, that he threw a silver dollar across the Potomac when he was a kid, and that he chopped down the apple tree and then confessed to it. And I understand these stories were just made up. And,
You know, but they serve a mythological purpose, and I think that's what the stories about Judy Garland and the drag queens have done for gay people collectively. They've served a mythological, that is, a psychological function.
But there were not, there were trans people that could be comfortable being trans at the Stonewall Inn.
Well, you get different testimony on that. It's that, you know, the mafia wouldn't always allow transvestites here. It probably depended. It may have been different from year to year. It probably depended in part who was on the door.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they were more, they would let in people who were friends of theirs as opposed to a certain category in general. It was not unusual for there to be a few transvestites at the home, at the Stonewall Inn. You know, on any given night, you might see one, two, or three. There were not usually a lot. I think that night, there is a grain of truth to that story. I think that night, there were more than usual there. I think the transvestites were among the first to resist. You know, the white middle-class college kids were also resisting. And really, the people who resisted most were those who generally have gotten the least credit, and that is homeless street youth, most of whom were, you know, white, probably many who came from middle-class families and were thrown out because they were gay. And my research shows that, by and large, the street youth were very effeminate young men. What I, you know, again, going back to the idea that there's a grain of truth in the idea that it was mainly transvestites or mainly transgendered people who were responsible for the rebellion, I would say something a little different from that. I would say that those who generally fought the most and the hardest, they were generally gender nonconforming. But that may mean it was a an effeminate young gay man, for example. Who never wore a dress, or if he wore a dress, he wore it occasionally for prostitution purposes just to make money. And, you know, there are all kinds of ahistorical things that enter into here. For example, if you say to a young person today that, you know, transvestites were there, they're probably likely to imagine someone like a transvestite from the 1990s or the current time, a Lady Bunny figure from New York City, for example. But these kids who would go in drag occasionally, they pretty much just got together anything they could, sometimes stole it, and it was often drag that wasn't really meant to very seriously pass for to make people think they were a woman. It was often because they hustled down on the piers with straight men, and the straight men wanted to have some, you know, deniability themselves that they were, you know, having sex with another man.
There's such a personal aspect to your book. I mean, there have been other books written about Stonewall, but this Stonewall, the riots that sparked the gay generation, you really spotlight that gay generation, or the gay revolution, sorry, but you really spotlight that gay generation that you're talking about, and that cross section by the fact that you got to interview so many people and kind of, it really felt like you were just giving snapshots in almost a very filmic, cinematic way, which I'll ask later. We got to have a movie made of your book. But that gets us a little closer to maybe deciphering, you know, what happened that night. What do you think did happen? I mean, the police had planned a raid. And what was it about that night that made that night unique?
Well, the you know, there was growing resistance, and I credit that to the advances that had been made, at least I credit in part to the advances that had been made by the homophile movement. That is, that's what we, you know, historians usually call the movement, the gay civil rights movement before Stonewall, the homophile movement. They had made progress here in the city. They had ended police entrapment. They had made progress toward legalizing gay bars. I mean, there are certainly other factors that enter into it, like the general feeling of freedom and all the political turmoil of the 1960s. There are many factors that go into it.
Well, and we should say this was just months after the Chicago 7 here with the Democratic National Convention in our town, where you see kind of a similar young white protesters rioting as well.
Well, yes. I mean, I think the fact that Stonewall happened in the 1960s is highly relevant because it was a time when there was you know, everybody demanding freedom and change on every front. I think gay people just happened to be the last group that did it because of, you know, the, I think what people would call today, recognize today as generally legitimate civil rights movements, we were considered then the most far out.
Right.
So we were the last in the line, so to speak. But because of that, it also meant that I think that when we got our break and the gay liberation movement emerged out of and after Stonewall, that we could move very fast because the consciousness had been prepared, the idea that, yeah, it's just another wave of freedom. It's another group wanting their civil rights. It's another group mm-hmm. wanting respect. Plus, I mean, you'd had women's liberation come along before. You'd had, you know, androgyny in styles and fashion. Mm-hmm. You'd had the sexual revolution. So in a way, this was sort of just the next logical step from another mm-hmm. point of view.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you talk about just that, you know, there had been another riot that week in the bar. Maybe people were just so, they were just so pushed against the wall, and that it was one of the hottest nights than in New York history, and what we know about that, there was a full moon. I mean, we're just all the cards kind of stacked for this thing to happen, right? It was like a powder keg.
Well, exactly. I mean, people usually will ask the question, they just like to say who started the riot, you know, mm-hmm. that presupposes it was one person who did it, that one person hadn't been there and done a certain action, it wouldn't have happened. Mm-hmm. And people will say, well, what caused Stonewall to happen? They usually think you're going to come up with one thing, but it's really, I think, a whole long list of things that came together. A person can turn to the conclusions part of my book and see that I list about, I don't know, 25 or so factors mm-hmm. that came together, and they were of different kinds, you know, sociological, political, the weather, the physical geography of the streets, the social mm-hmm. geography, the fact that it was a transportation hub, the fact that you had alternative media venues and other kinds of alternative institutions around it. Mm-hmm. It was really just one of those moments where everything almost magically, it seems, mm-hmm. lined up just right.
Yeah. And because of that, you alluded to this earlier, but because of that, there were these, the response, what started to happen, as you, I think you said, very quickly, like change started coming very quickly after June 28th. Was that also because all of these things were lined up for these kind of early pioneers of the movement to seize hold of it and to have the voice like on the same block, like the media covering it and being in New York City in this epicenter, like you said?
Yes, I think that, you know, the fact that some of the people who took leadership positions in the gay liberation movement that came out of Stonewall, that is specifically in the Gay Liberation Front and then the Gay Activist Alliance as being the first two groups of that kind,
mm-hmm.
A number of those people had been involved in the anti-war movement or in the student movement or in the homophile movement, but most mm-hmm. of them really came from the New Left, you know, movement. So that there was that, you know, they had the experience there. I interviewed a couple of people, one person from my book who went to Chicago. Speaking mm-hmm. of the Chicago, the police riot during the Democratic Convention in August 1968, I interviewed somebody from my book who was at Stonewall and who'd gone there with other gay men to participate. And he said that, you know, as they'd go there, they fantasized that there should be a gay movement, you know, mm-hmm. like there was the anti-war movement and the other movements they were involved in. And I think that's another thing is that happened is that gay people in the early and mid-60s feeling oppressed, but feeling they were so oppressed they didn't have any outlet, I think they therefore, A, because of that they were sensitive to social injustice, they were likely to be sympathetic to a person who was oppressed because they were Latino or black, for example. And then they could get out some of their anger, their own oppression, by they could sublimate that anger by being taking part in the anti-war movement or the movement for black civil rights, which many, many gay people did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that changed their consciousness. It also gave them certain skills that would be very useful then when they came into the gay liberation movement.
Mm-hmm. It's so fascinating. You know, we finally have this year where Milk is produced and a story that is, you know, almost as old as this story that we're talking about. You know, they're almost tandem stories. You know, is happening on the West Coast, Stonewall and the movements you're talking about that followed Stonewall on the East Coast. Is this a story that needs to be brought to the masses more as we're coming with what's going on in our country today? You know, just the movement we're seeing right now with same-sex marriage, and we do seem to have some momentum right now with the changing of the guard on the Hill. Maybe not as much as we like, but state by state it seems to be changing. Is the time for, will there be a movie about Stonewall? And would there be a movie based on your book about Stonewall?
Well, next year there will be a documentary made for the American Experience series on PBS that's being filmed now. We probably have now finished most of the interviews for that documentary film. I'm very excited about that because I think it's very important that people mm-hmm. be able to hear and see the people who are actually there tell the story. That's going to be much more powerful mm-hmm. than reading it on a page, you know, what I was able to do in my book. Mm-hmm. So I'm delighted that this is happening. There's these people being, you know, very, you know, photographed at the very, you know, all this is, you know, being done on a production value at the very highest level.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that eventually there will be a feature film, because that brings something to the table again, just like a documentary brings something a book doesn't bring, and a book brings something a documentary doesn't bring, and a feature film brings something else, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So my book was optioned in Hollywood. While it was optioned, the film rights were not sold, but I'm hoping now with the success both I'm trying to remember the name of the film, Brokeback Mountain mm-hmm. and Milk,
mm-hmm.
that Hollywood will consider, you know, what is our essentially our, you know, sort of Moses and the Ten Commandments story, you know, our basic,
yeah.
The basic founding of our movement, so to
yeah.
speak.
Yeah, well, it's just interesting, you know, how much cinematic history there is with the civil rights movement. And, you know, you can think of so many films that have been made and continuing to just have our stories be told to reach, you know, the masses, I think is very important. And that documentary sounds extremely, extremely exciting. And I do want to let everybody know that you can, if you're in the Chicago area, David's going to be the keynote speaker this fall, and I'm going to be sure to be there at Gerber Hart Library so I can meet him face to face. It's October 3rd at the Gerber Hart annual benefit for the library. And as we know, we're very fortunate here in Chicago to have like the largest archive in history of GLBT literature. And you can find out more about David on his website, davidcarterauthor.com, and we'll have that linked on our notes as well. The book Stonewall, The Riots That Sparked the Gay Revolution is available on St. Martin's Griffin Press. You can get it at davidcarterauthor.com. I always love to tell you to pick it up at your local gay bookstore or go on Amazon. If you're on David's site, you can click on and buy it from Amazon. So I guess, we have to wrap up, but I do want to know, what will you be doing on June 28th? How will you commemorate that moment in our history? And the moment that obviously you've spent so much time with the ghosts and the memories and the echoes of the Stonewall riots?
Well, I'm spending a lot of time this month with many of the friends I made researching my book who were there.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing panels together everywhere and being interviewed, panel discussions, interviews. I'm trying to get them, you know, out as much as I can so people have a chance to meet these people, to hear the history from their own mouths.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that weekend I'll be doing more interviews.
Yeah.
Trying to get the history recorded. Well, I'd just like to add that I think, you know, it is important that people know this story, because
yeah.
if we're going to be a people, that means you have to have a common culture. That means having a common story. And certainly Stonewall is like other key events in gay history, like the trial of Oscar Wilde or
mm-hmm.
gay people being victims of the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
Various
or the modern day Matthew Shepard, you know, I mean, that's now exactly. become a mythological story for us as well.
Right. It's important people know that. So we also we have to put pressure on, you know, the educational institutions now to include the story of our quest for gay civil rights, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender civil rights, to tell that as part of the American story, because it is American history
mm-hmm.
and it is human rights history and it is civil rights history.
Well, thank you for bringing it in such vivid and just compelling. It's a compelling, compelling read, everybody. I tell you, it's like reading a film, there is just so much information there. I mean, I thought I knew quite a bit about the Stonewall riots, and I really knew very little, and now know a lot more after reading your book. It has gotten praise from anybody and everybody you can imagine, of course, from the Advocate to Kirkus to everyone. So pick up the book, Stonewall, The Riots That Sparked the Gay Revolution. Great book to read during this Pride season, or honestly, it's a great beach book. It's a great summer book as we're heading into summer to get to know our history. And keep that momentum going, because it's going. The momentum is on our side.
I'm sorry. I'm proud to say that Barbara Gittings said she used to have a list she called Goodreads, and she wished she'd had that list going when she read my book, because she would have put it on her list as a good read.
Oh, well, man, that's a great endorsement right there. everybody, pick it up, check it out, and take a moment to pause on June 28th and remember what we all have to be grateful for about our community, how far we have come in 40 years, and how much more we can do and contribute to our community. It is a revolution that continues. It has been sparked in a moment in time, but we continue to fan those embers with all our actions, and especially just coming out. So be out and proud, folks. David Carter, thanks so much for being on with us.
Okay, thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to being in Chicago in the fall.
Got something to say? Call us today, 312-21-BE-GAY.
So, Alex, it's so nice to have you here.
Okay, bye.
Everybody, come and see Alex as the Grand Marshal. It means you got to get there early. She'll be at the very front of the parade, and you'll have the little motor scooter guy who's usually motor scootering in front of you.
Really?
Beeping his horn.
Oh.
He looks like Rip Torn. I don't know what his name is, unless he doesn't do that anymore.
Are you sure it's not Rip Taylor?
Oh, maybe Rip Taylor.
Ah!
Yes, it's Rip Taylor. Rip Torn is the one.
That would be so happy.
I love him. Oh. Hey, can I ask you one quick question?
Yes.
Just because you're the only person I know who's ever been on Grey's Anatomy, and we love the Grey's Anatomy in my household.
Yes.
T.R. Knight not coming back to Grey's Anatomy. Which is kind of the big news. Is this surprising news to you?
I don't watch the show.
But you were on it.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, when you were on the show, and then, like, 3 weeks later was when all homophobic hell broke loose.
The shit hit the fan, honey.
With Isaiah Washington, who still seems to be doing penance for life. I'm like,
well, good.
Yeah.
Well, quite frankly.
There you go.
Because this apology I didn't buy, nor did I believe it.
Okay, good.
And until he makes right in his heart...
Yep.
All of this stuff is going to keep happening. I'm just saying.
So what do you think that this is, though? Do you think that this is backlash since T.R. Knight was also a part of that little circle?
I don't think so.
You don't think
why would it
related?
Be?
So, but is there anything...
I mean, why would they punish him for, you know what I mean?
I don't know. The dishes all become that, you know, he and Katherine Heigl are difficult, and that's the way the press
plays. Oh, that's bullshit. They're not difficult people at all.
So is the storyline just gone? Is there just nothing to do with him?
Probably. He probably wants to, you know, go do other things, yeah. I'm sure. You know, he was a theater actor in New York for years before he got this gig, and he probably misses the theater.
Yeah. So you don't think there's anything except it's just a new chapter in his life and his storyline's kind of done?
Time for him to go.
Yeah.
He probably just is like, you know, I want to go back to New
He's
York
a nice guy.
He's a fabulous guy.
Yeah, he seems sweet.
Oh, he and Katie are both fantastic, funny, unbelievably talented, extremely
humble people. And I know that you were
people.
In the Romeo and Michelle's reunion
thing,
part two
movie
with
thing.
The Katherine Heigl.
Burr.
And you like her a lot.
I love her.
You know her.
You would love her, Amy. She's fantastic. She's a great, great, great girl. You'd never know she was as famous as she was. You'd never know it just by talking to her.
Yeah.
You'd never know it.
Yeah.
She's great. No, TR probably
but
just
she's
wants
staying
to
and TR's leaving. What does TNR stand for? Do you know?
Terribly rich.
Terribly rich, which he is now.
That's right.
So now he can do whatever the hell he wants to do.
Correct.
Well, maybe he'd want to do some gay theater with you and I.
That's a good idea. Let's call him.
Let's call him up.
Hello.
Tur.
We like to call him Tur.
Well, happy 40th.
Happy 40th.
We will talk to you after the parade, so we're going to get the play-by-play. I hope you will take some notes. Too bad we can't podcast from the middle of it.
That's a good idea, isn't it?
If I was on your car or if I was beside your car, we could
Well, you could be in the trunk. I told you that.
Alex! Clang, 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 clang. Let me out of here!
With the trolley! Ding, 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 went the bell. Zing, 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 went my heartstrings.
See what's different is 40 years later, the transgender person is actually the sheriff or the marshal.
I shot the sheriff, but I did not shoot the deputy.
So different than 40 years ago.
It's true.
Where the raids were being, you know, the sheriffs and the marshals coming in.
Now we're doing the raiding.
There you go.
How do you like them apples?
We'll see you after the parade.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.